Welcome to Porch Talk. I'm Ted Tate, sitting here with Chris Adcock, and we are at the birthplace of James Monroe with the, I believe, chief docent, Bucky Doerr, and a park attendant, Deborah Mills, who are both, co-docent of the James Monroe Birthplace Park, and we are here to talk to them a little bit about themselves and about the park, because I think it's a resource that is so close to Colonial Beach, and yet a lot of us don't even know about it or have a lot of details about everything going on here. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down here in this beautiful park setting on what is a beautiful Labor Day weekend to chat with both of you. So welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'll start with, I guess, asking Bucky, are you from this area or did you move to this area? What's your beginnings here in the Colonial Beach, Westmoreland area?
My beginnings were in 1970 when my husband got a job at Dahlgren and we moved up from Texas. He worked over there and we started living here in 1971. Our third child was born here. Each one of my kids was born in a different state due to my husband's career going moving
in the Navy.
But so I've lived here, you know, right at 50 years, and I got involved with the Monroe Foundation through Art Buswell, who was once for a while he was our town manager, and I worked with him then, and so. When he went on to other things and he became park superintendent out here, because he had been involved with the Monroe Foundation from the very beginning.
Now, did you live in Colonial Beach proper?
I live in Bluff Point, which is just outside of Colonial Beach,
okay.
Like that area between the main part of the residence and Wilkerson's restaurant.
Okay.
That way,
mm-hmm.
It's called Bluff Point. But Art was working with the foundation, and I had retired. And he thought I had too much time on my hands, getting into too much mischief. So he said, you really ought to check this out. So I did, and I became a volunteer out here. And
how did he sell you on it? He said, check this out. What was this at that time?
Well, I don't know if that's the words that he used, but basically he wanted me to just, to observe, to, see if this was something I would like to get involved with. Basically, he told me that he thought I would be a good fit, and they didn't have anybody local who could have eyes on and be in the park on short notice, because all of the administrators were someplace else. At that time, Art did and still does live up in Chancellorsville, which is above Fredericksburg, and the others from the Richmond area. And they really needed somebody local, somebody that they could call and say, who shall we call to get such and such done? Do you know anybody who does, whatever they needed, doing plumbing, electrical work, grading, that sort of thing.
So what was here at that time?
Not very much. Seriously, I mean, we had the land.
Mm-hmm.
We had the land, but they were trying to develop the land, and they needed to know who they could call up on to do the sort of things that needed to be done, such as grading and, electrical work for putting in there, and just generally eyes on.
Mm-hmm.
So that my youngest son and I, he said, Mom, if you get involved in stuff like that, then this is something that you probably should do. It actually probably started with DAR, because my middle son that lives up in Fredericksburg had become a member of an SAR chapter up there, and searching his genealogy for SAR, and he said, Mom, I think this is something you would enjoy, and you ought to check it out. So that's how I got involved with DAR, was through my son telling me, this is something you need to do, Mom.
Okay.
And so it was through DAR then that I met Deborah. But I think it was after I became involved with DAR that Art, who is the, he was the president of the JMSAR chapter. I think he's not doing that anymore.
What is JMSAR?
James Monroe Sons of the American Revolution. It's a chapter just like our DAR is Daughters of the American Revolution, and they have different chapters in different areas. And ours is called the Leedstown Resolutions Chapter, and we meet up in King George.
Now, if you were from Texas, how were you thinking that you were a daughter of the American Revolution?
Because my son had done his genealogy research,
okay.
And it's through my line that he is you know, related to one of the American Patriots.
Okay. So, so was your family originally from this area or somewhere else?
No, Michigan.
Michigan, okay.
Michigan, yeah. But I married a Texan, you see.
And then ended up in Colonial Beach.
And ended up in Colonial Beach because that's where his job is, was.
So then, through your involvement with DAR, this is how you and Debbie met?
Yep.
So tell us about that. Or maybe Debbie can tell us about that. What's your side of the story?
Yeah.
Well, I originally came down here after a divorce and after passing life in Northern Virginia as the person that I met was on a motorcycle BBS bulletin board.
The old bulletin board system.
Oh my, okay. Before, before internet.
Yes.
And... he said, there's lots of great places to ride down here, and I came down here, and we became roommates, and then I bought a house, and we become housemates, and more like husband and wife,
okay.
And we've traveled in the motorcycles all over the place.
So,
and
so you're the one on the back, is that
no, no. I drive.
She showed up at the first DAR meeting on her motorcycle. And the regent looked at me and she said, we didn't know what we were getting when she rolled in on that motorcycle.
That's awesome.
That's funny.
That's great.
But this was one of the places I used to roll through with my motorcycle. And at the time, it just had a marker up front and just a little driveway around. And unfortunately, a lot of people would just come through here or not pay attention to it because there wasn't really anything here.
Now when you were doing that on a motorcycle and it was just a marker by the road, I mean, did you at that point feel like there was something more to it? You sound like you may have had some premonition.
I didn't know at the time that anything was going to happen to this except be a marker for James Monroe, because coming from Northern Virginia, I mean, there's a lot of developed historical sites up there,
mm-hmm.
but some places are just markers.
Right.
But
so
I accepted that.
As a person riding by on a motorcycle, I mean, I guess it was fun to stop and take a look at these things. And
it was, and I was thinking, gee, if this would ever get bigger and better, this would be a nice place to, like, bring your motorcycle friends and rest
mm-hmm.
and enjoy it and then go forth on the rest of the ride.
Is that what you were doing already, but without any facilities, basically just using it as a rest stop?
Kind of. Hmm. You just, you know, when you're riding on your bike, there comes a time when you get a little overheated and you just say, I need to stop and cool off for a bit. And you try to find a place that maybe is a little park or a picnic area or is just something that would be of relaxation mm-hmm. interests.
And quiet.
Exactly.
Especially after you turn off that noisy motorcycle engine, you want to just have a little quiet and listen to the nature sounds.
Yep, just let your ears go back to normal.
Yeah, exactly. So you pull up to this DAR meeting, and I guess that's where you two met?
Yeah, when she was, actually just before she became a member, because it takes a while to work through the process of vetting mm-hmm. all of your documentation.
Yeah, it took me over a year because we went with one Patriot and couldn't get through to him, and then we went through the Patriot that I am related to, Moses Greer, and found out that there was another Moses Greer who did some bad things, and the good Moses Greer had to go to court to say, yes, I am this, and this is how I want my record to be.
So in the Daughters of the American Revolution, you have to prove you're from a good guy?
You have to prove you're related to an American patriot, regardless whether he was good or bad.
Okay. Right.
And we have some that were, you know, their patriots were American who fought for the Confederacy.
Right.
I mean, you know, they were American patriots too, and they fought as hard for what they believed in as anybody else did, and they deserve their credit as well. But that's the process for all DAR or SAR. You have to prove your genealogy back to an American patriot.
Hmm. Interesting.
A patriot being one who served in the Revolutionary War.
Ah, okay.
Either
so
side.
You defined it there. Good, good. I know my family goes far back, but I don't know whether any of them actually... I know I can trace my mother's side back to the 1600s. But I don't know. They must have fought in the war, but I don't know that for a fact. I never
researched
that.
Well, it shouldn't be very difficult to, it should be very easy is what I mean to say, to trace, especially people on the East Coast here, because a lot of the families are very old families, and they trace back to it very easily. You should be able to document your ancestry back to a patriarch.
And Chris can trace.
As I mentioned, to the Lees through marriage, or well,
there you go.
Connected.
So you're already halfway there.
Right.
And it shouldn't take, especially in the East Coast, because so many of us are, just related, descendant, because we love it here. We live here. This is our home for generations.
Yeah. I'm seven generations in Washington.
Well, there you go.
So it's on, that's my mom's side. So.
Yeah,
Dad's hard. Virginia, mom's D.C. So.
So the two of you are at DAR, and then you separately or together sort of found out about, you found out about James Monroe Park through the town supervisor?
Town manager?
Yeah,
who was the president of the James Monroe SAR. It took me a while to think about it. He said, I had no idea when I got you into this, whatever he said, and I said, is that how that happened? I couldn't remember.
You forgot.
I couldn't remember. But Deborah and I got acquainted and found out that her interest was, also in historical things due to her genealogy. So I said, well, volunteer. Okay. In fact, if you live here, even if you're here only weekends, and you would like to volunteer as a docent sometime or as a park attendant, I mean, all of our badges are just like hers. They all say park attendant. We happen to have an extra designation, but I choose not to emphasize that because I'm like everybody else. I'm a park attendant. Our business is the park.
Right.
I mean, the house and the visitor center, that really isn't so much our bailiwick as the park is. We are a park. The people use the park. That's where my passion is.
Okay.
I think the house will always be the focal point of the presentation out here, but it's the park that people use, and that's what our concern is. Mostly.
Okay.
It's the house that people see instead of the marker.
Absolutely.
So.
Because a marker is just a sign, and people will spend, if they even bother to stop, it'll be 5 minutes, but a house is something that people will actually be more likely to stop for and take a longer look at. So the house has been obviously a big project for your group for some time now.
The Monroe Foundation.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that got started and maybe some of the trials and tribulations you've been through? Because I know you have.
Careful, how far we go. No, seriously, the house is a project of the James Monroe Foundation. That was already in the works before we came on board as park attendants. This is only my third year. It's her second year.
Ah.
Right, so the house, really, we're not qualified to address that, except that I can tell you there have been some serious reversals because things were not built according to code. And when the inspectors came and could not pass those things, they had to be undone and then redone. And that takes a while.
Absolutely.
So that's why the house has been delayed. But we have every confidence now that we've covered all of those areas and everything is up to spec. And we'll be able to open the house by April. We have an annual birthday celebration for James Monroe on the Saturday previous to the 28th, which is his birthday.
So April 28th is his birthday?
April 28th is his birthday, and on the Saturday previous to that, there is a large, very wonderful celebration of his birthday here. A lot of pageantry, color guards, uniformed.
All right.
You gotta
be here
for that.
Yeah, we do it the week before because they do a big celebration down where he's buried in Richmond at the Hollywood Cemetery, the weekend that is closest.
Okay, so as not to compete.
Exactly.
Because I'm sure you've got a whole bunch of James Monroe groupies. James Monroe groupies who want to go to all of the events.
Well, we do find out the more that we're here and more people come in, there are people that are specific president groupies. They do like to look at the certain presidents.
Mm, that's interesting.
And a lot of people love James Monroe because they find out so much that he did that he's not remembered for.
Right.
He was kind of like going everywhere they needed somebody to go and do something.
And in fact, he could have ended his life just as a civil servant, as it were, to this fledgling democracy and never having served as president, because he was going and doing what he was asked to do by George Washington, by Thomas Jefferson. You know, they said, will you be Secretary of State, I believe it was, for a while?
And governor of
Virginia for 5 terms and so on and so forth. And he went where he was at, felt he was needed. And yet...
He was the go-to.
He was the go-to guy because they all trusted him. They knew he was intelligent and they knew he was... had the right ideas and ideals. So it's interesting that timeline lays that out for people that they wouldn't already know. Why don't you tell me, I'm doing it poorly, why don't you tell me some of the milestones in his life that you found most fascinating or unsung?
I just love knowing that James Monroe did so much. I mean, he went to Europe and he was ambassador and our foreign agent for 3 countries. And I know that at the time that he was working with Spain, that he and Washington got into it because Washington was being pro-England. And they would say, now, don't give Spain too much liberty because we've got England that's...
Like,
yeah, because, I mean, we came from England, so,
right.
You know, being our father country, he wanted to be more loyal to them than to the ones that we were trying to get property from to secure the rest of the United States.
So he didn't always see eye to eye with Washington.
Not always.
Yeah, as you'd expect, honestly, I guess. And, I mean, looking back at my history lessons... so long ago, I remember certainly that he was the 5th president, and the other thing that I remember from those history lessons was the Monroe Doctrine.
Yes, and the Monroe Doctrine, in fact, wasn't even made official until after his death, which, I mean, everybody remembers the Monroe Doctrine because of Monroe, but it didn't become effective until he died, and until... a number of years after he died.
So, excuse my fuzzy history, but so was the Monroe Doctrine an actual written document that said these things, or was it just his policy as president?
I think it was kind of an undermining policy and what he was preaching at the time, and it was kind of...
ideas.
Yeah, it was an idea that everybody was holding on to, and there probably was a basis in writing. But because a lot of things aren't recorded in detail as to some of these things, you don't know exactly what status it had.
So it was more of a policy. It wasn't, say, a law written that was ratified by Congress or anything like
right.
that.
Right. It was kind of like the era of good feelings. You know, every president has something that goes along with him that he was known for, and that's kind of the charismatic ploy that they brought into our system.
And just... to remind our listeners who aren't up on their history, what did the Monroe Doctrine say?
Well, the Monroe Doctrine was wonderful because it kept countries that were here and sold us property from coming back and taking it back over and making us less than we were becoming at the time. I mean, we got so big, and it was nice that we had the Northern Hemisphere, and it was kind of like telling Europe to stay in their Eastern Hemisphere and to keep the Southern Hemisphere to those countries as well. And that's sort of where some of the European countries went when we wouldn't let them up here.
So this was our way of saying, okay, this is ours now. We bought the remaining lands from you, and you're not coming back.
Exactly. We want to be us.
When this was all starting and you were in the DAR with Bucky and she started getting involved in the park, you just joined up. She convinced you to join in and do this with her because you liked this park, or what was that?
Bucky and I were becoming friendly at the DAR meetings, and because she was down here in Colonial Beach, I wanted somebody, because I was newer to Colonial Beach than she was, to give me kind of an idea of what was around here and what was special and, you know, kind of the events. But I mean, Colonial Beach almost reminds me, since I came from Northern Virginia, that it's still kind of like the 1800s down here because it's calm. I mean, we don't even have our own movie theater.
Some people would say that's a good thing. Some people would say that's a bad thing. Now, Bucky, you went off a bit to go chat with some people. So I guess that's how you... Today you're closed, technically.
Yeah.
And yet here you are greeting people who just wander into the park.
Who were from Nebraska.
Okay.
Love that.
And they're on a road trip and...
Yep.
Just decided to stop by here.
He said, you know, that they are from... they're visiting relatives in the area. And he said, and you were on the agenda. So I said, well, there's some other places. So I told him, you know, about some other places. But that's the neat thing. Anytime I'm out here, there's almost always somebody in the park.
We just enjoy the park and what we're learning and the way we end our season with a party. And we like to think of what Monroe did when he was growing up, since you can't really find it out there on the web or anywhere else. I mean, he basically was born and then went to the academy and got involved in the war and the government, and that's where you learned about him.
So what we know about him is very little of his early days, but we know he was born right here in on this land.
In a planter's house, so...
Right. So
he may have had some farm duties.
Owned all of what is now Colonial Beach, because it's called Monroe Bay, and the peninsula, the point as we call it, it was all part of the plantation, wasn't it?
I think so, 1,100 acres. I don't know for sure what the boundary lines were, but 1,100 acres is a
pretty
good piece of land. And I know we know that it went from the creek that direction, so a lot of the original was on the other side of what is now the highway. And unfortunately, when they put 205 through and paved it, they probably destroyed a lot of what would have been outbuildings, because the house is there, and of course that was the center of the population of the plantation. But most of the buildings would have been probably that direction, and all of this would have been probably planted areas, possibly. I mean, what we're looking at now is, you know, largely woods. But this is fairly new growth,
mm-hmm.
new growth trees
yeah.
and stuff. But
at one time, this would have been tobacco fields,
or whatever else they grew.
Yeah,
plus, you know, farm animals that
pasture.
They would have, and household gardens.
So we're actually running out of time, but we've got a few minutes left. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you'd like to talk about?
Oh wow. Just pick a subject. I could go on for hours.
I mean, this is a northern neck, and it has the beginnings of what made us the United States.
That's right.
Yeah, all
is
of our.
Is that the attraction for you?
That's one of the
here?
Attractions. I mean, talking about Monroe takes up, I would say, 98% of what we talk about, but we do mention the other spots that are very close to us, and we have a Road to Revolutions pamphlet with that, too.
What makes you want to do this? Because you're obviously all volunteers doing this for free. Why do you enjoy doing it? You obviously do it because you enjoy it.
You meet so many nice new people that are also interested in history the way it was. And unfortunately, because some folks, whoever they are taking down our statues and the plaques and some of the things that were established by George Washington and any of the patriots that, quote unquote, had slaves, it was something in our history. We need to know about our history so we don't make the same mistakes.
The passion for me is that I'm local, and there's just so very little local interest in this. Like I said, all of the administration people are from someplace else. And even the fellow that trained me, I mean, he and his wife opened the park and maintained it for 5 years all by themselves. Because they and he, the last, I think he may have moved, but he lived in Ladysmith, which is a pretty good ways off from here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm local, you know, and there needs to be a local face of this park. So
and James Monroe is the local boy.
He is the local boy.
Yeah.
He's the local president. He's ours. This is ours.
Yeah.
We need to embrace that. And, you know, we are the local face of the park.
Yeah.
That's where my passion is.
And I can hear it in your voice.
I just want to you know.
Want everybody to know.
Yeah, I can tell you have a passion for this. That's wonderful.
I do.
Bucky Doerr, thank you very much.
You're so
and
welcome.
Deborah Mills, thank you very much for spending some time with us, giving us this personal tour of this wonderful park. My name is Ted Tate. I'm here with Chris Adcock, and we have really, really enjoyed the personal service.
Really great.
Come again.
We will be back. We will be back.